From Quality Radio Productions, it's another edition of the Upstate Radio Theater. Hello, everyone. My name is Jake Longwell. Welcome to another hour of sounds from the golden age of radio. We'll open today's program with an episode of The Woodbury Show, as in Woodbury Facial Soap. This series ran on CBS from 1933 to 1935 and starred a young Bing Crosby. Of course, Mr. Crosby hosted many different radio shows over the decades for many different sponsors, including Kraft Foods, Ford Motor Company, Chesterfield Cigarettes, and General Electric, among others. The Woodbury Show, one of his earliest radio series. This broadcast is from September 18th of 1934, and the first song, Love is in Bloom. It's The Woodbury Show starring Bing Crosby, opening up this hour of the Upstate Radio Theater.
Bing Crosby entertains.
Can it be the trees that fill the breeze with rare and magic perfume? You know it isn't the trees, it's love in bloom.
The makers of Woodbury Facial Soap open another season with Bing Crosby, the Boswell sisters, Georgie Stoll, and his orchestra. First, here's Bing.
Good evening. You know, it's great to be back with my radio friends. And speaking as the father of twins, I might say, in fact, I will say, it's a double pleasure to be on this program again. And as a result thereof, I am humming, singing, and...
All through the day, I'm nervous, I'm restless, and I'm fidgety. Waiting for the day to hurry, hurry by. I kind of like the evening. Give me a crimson sky. When the sun is low, I'm riding high. I'm humming. 'Cause my daily work is through, and I know that night is coming, and the night will find me arm in arm with you. I'm whistling, looking at that lovely moon. When the stars above are glistening, I'm as tickled as a baby with a toy balloon. La, 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 I'm singing, happy as a boy can be, 'cause I see you right there waiting, underneath the usual tree for two. And if you wonder why I'm humming, and if you wonder why I'm whistling, if you wonder why I'm singing, well, I'm singing and I'm humming and I'm whistling all the day, 'cause I'm on my way to you. La, 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 I'm singing, happy as a boy can be, 'cause I see you right there waiting, and you're underneath that usual 3-4-2. If you wonder why I'm humming, oh, why am I singing? If you wonder why I'm whistling, Well, I'm singing and I'm humming, and I'm whistling all the day, 'cause I'm on my way to you.
Some women still think of a lovely skin as a gift of fate. This is no longer true. Every day there is additional proof that a beautiful complexion can be acquired by any girl or woman who really wants one. This is not an unsupported claim. Beauty clinics of nine nations have proved it by means of half-face tests. These clinics were supervised by eminent skin specialists. Case histories of hundreds of complexion problems show that every type of skin responds to Woodbury's precious oils and rare unguents, while other soaps and beauty aids gave negative or scarcely noticeable results, Woodbury facial soap brought freshness and health to every skin within 30 days. The reason is not hard to understand. Woodbury's is not merely a soap. It's a beauty treatment compounded according to the prescription of a famous skin specialist. And here's something to remember. Woodbury's is the only soap which has ever proved its claim.
Well, well, Kenneth Niles. Here again.
Yes, here again, Bing.
Did you summer well, Kenzie?
Oh, I'm one of the best. And how about yours, Bing?
The greatest summer of my life. First, they were the twins.
Ah, yes, the twins. Say, have you learned much about them?
No, it's a new racket for me, but what would you like to know?
Well, tell me something about them. Anything.
Well, twins usually look alike, having been born more or less under the same conditions and having no particular preference in the matter.
They don't say.
Sure, and if they resemble the mother, they have what might be called a flying start in life.
Well, what if they resemble the father?
Well, in that case, they should be held right end up and patted lightly on their respective backs.
Don't say.
I do say.
Well, how about the upkeep on twins? It must be staggering, Bing.
No, not at all. The overhead on a small pair is much less than on a single pair. Now, your greater buying power naturally enables you to do your shopping wholesale. And the tidy sum you save in this way may be set aside as a marching fund to send your little squad through military school.
And after they grow up, what sort of careers have you in mind for them?
Well, I don't quite know. I hadn't thought of it, but if they were girls instead of boys and triplets instead of twins, they could sing like, three girls with but a single father. Harmony. And what harmony? They're here now and for many weeks to come. The Boswell sisters.
Call his giddy dance. I got to give you. Why could you? They've got those EBs.
Now, sweet music from a swell band. It's the boys' first broadcast on a coast-to-coast hookup. I've guessed how you feel about it already. It's far from their last. Introducing Hollywood's newest favorite, Georgie Stoll and his orchestra.
Kiss your hand, madame, your dainty fingertips.
Now there's a romantic song picture for you, Kenneth. I kiss your hand, madame.
It all depends on the hand, babe. There are hands and hands.
I see. Now you wouldn't by any remote chance be leading around to the skin you love to touch.
How'd you guess it? Now, Bing, this little incident is from real life. Mildred returns home and finds her roommate in tears.
Why, Barbara, what's the matter?
Nothing. Except that Jack is taking that hallowed old girl to the theater again.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't want to be pitied. Tell me what to do.
Well, do you want me to be frank? The first thing you need is a good complexion.
Oh, I haven't blemishes.
No, but your skin hasn't any life either. It isn't fresh and glowy. You know, the skin you love to touch.
Isn't that an advertising slogan?
Yes, Woodbury.
I suppose by starting to use Woodbury's facial soap, my troubles will be ended overnight.
No, not overnight. But I can tell you this. If you use Woodbury's regularly, you'll notice a big improvement in 2 or 3 weeks. I did. And so did all the other girls and women who took the half-face test. Perhaps you don't know it, but Woodbury's is the only beauty aid which ever proved its claim.
Bing Crosby now sings one of his latest recordings, an unpretentious little classic, the sort you and I have loved for years. It carried Jacob's Bond's plaintive melody, Just a Weary'un' for You.
Just a weary'un' for you. All the time I'm feeling blue, wishing for you, wondering when you'll be coming home again. Restless, I don't know what to do. A weary'un for you. Mm-hmm. morning comes and the birds away. They used to sing for your sake, but there's sadness in the notes that come trilling from their throats. Seem to feel your absence too. Just a weary hour for you.
The Boswell sisters, Connie, Beth, and Martha, sing "Why Don't You Practice What You Preach?"
You always tell me what I ought to do. You're telling me it's wrong to look at somebody new. You're telling me, well, I'm telling you, why don't you practice what you preach? Oh, you're always telling me, you wait until you call. I'm waiting, 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 and you don't call at all. You're calling me, well, I'm calling you. Why don't you practice what you preach? You tell me I'm your sugar pie, yeah. You swear you'll never tell a lie, yeah. You even say you hope to die. Well, how come you say it with your fingers crossed? You're always asking me to name that certain thing. And then you change the subject and you think it's okay. You're asking me, well, I'm asking you, why don't you practice what you preach? Do some thinking, staying home alone every night. But now I'm taking time to do some talking, separating wrong from right. Now you're always telling me what I ought to do. You're telling me it's wrong to look at somebody new. Oh, you're telling me, but I'm telling you. Why don't you practice what you preach? You're always telling me to wait until you call. I wait and wait and wait, then you don't call at all. Oh, you call me, well, I'm calling you. Why don't you practice what you preach? Tell me that I'm your sugar pie. Bang, 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 bang. You even say that you hope to die. How come you say your fingers crawl? You're always asking me to name that certain day. Then you change the subject and you think it's okay. You're telling me, well, I'm telling you, why don't you practice what you preach? Oh, why don't you tell me, why don't you practice what you preach? Why don't you tell me, why don't you practice what you preach? Why don't you practice what you preach?
By the way, Bing, a few minutes ago in talking about the past summer, you said, first, there were the twins. An event like that should come first, of course, but what was second?
Well, I had the good fortune, Ken, to be in a very fine story made into a picture by Paramount called She Loves Me Not. And I was lucky enough to get a hold of a great song like this one.
Blue night and you alone with me, my heart has never known such ecstasy. Am I on earth? Am I in heaven? Can it be the trees that fill the breeze with rare and magic perfume? Oh, no, it isn't the trees. It's love in bloom. Can it be the spring that seems to bring the stars right into my room? Oh, no, it isn't the spring. It's love in bloom. My heart was a desert, but you planted a seed. And this is the flower. This hour of sweet fulfillment. Is it all a dream, the joy supreme that came to us in the gloom? You know it isn't a dream. It's love in bloom.
Now, what's to keep anyone from having a lovely skin? Once, the 25-cent price of Woodbury's put it out of reach of all except a favored few, but now the price has been reduced from 25 cents to 10 cents, which is scarcely more than you pay for soap that's also sold in flake or chipped form for household drudgery. And there's been no change in Woodbury quality. You get the same precious oils and costly unguents. You get the same healing balm. The identical soap made by the scientific formula of a famous skin specialist. Your druggist, your department store, and your grocer all have Woodbury's at 10 cents a case. You'll also find it on sale at 10 cents and variety stores. At that price, you'll want to use it for the bath as well as the complexion. Treat yourself to a cake of Woodbury's facial soap tomorrow. Give your face a Woodbury's scientific beauty treatment. You'll enjoy the healthful stimulation and the difference it makes in your appearance.
everybody admires the skin you love to touch. We'll be with you again next Tuesday evening. Join us then and hear Bing sing,
I see your face in every flower and your eyes in stars above. It's just the thought of you, the very thought of you, my love.
This is Kenneth Niles speaking for the makers of Woodbury's Facial Soap. The program has come to you over Columbia's Coast to Coast Network.
An episode of The Woodbury Show, Bing Crosby, our star, from September 18th, 1934, on CBS, or the Columbia Network, as it was known back then, with the first song, Love is in Bloom. You are tuned to the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. It's a pleasure to present these classic radio shows each and every week. If you like what you hear, you can listen to the program anytime on our website at qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. You can also get full details about each radio show featured on each radio theater broadcast. We'll turn to some detective adventure for our final offering this hour. An episode of The Adventures of Sam Spade. Sam Spade, a character created by Dashiell Hammett, in a very successful radio series of the late 1940s, starring Howard Duff as Sam Spade, with Lorene Tuttle as his lovable assistant, Effie. This is an Armed Forces Radio rebroadcast from November 28th of 1948. It's called The Quarter Eagle Caper. Sam Spade, wrapping up this edition of the Upstate Radio Theater.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective.
To Thelma, darling.
Last name, Sam.
Roger.
Thelma, Roger.
Darling.
I only asked, Sam.
Let's get on with it.
Yes, Sam, I'm sorry. From Samuel Spade, license number 137596. Subject?
Subject, the Quarter Eagle Caper. Dear Thelma, darling.
Sam.
Yes, Seth?
Isn't that redundant?
Again?
The salutation, Sam. Shouldn't it be Dear Thelma or Thelma, darling? But not both?
Now, get this, Eff. It's real deep. Her name is Thelma Darling.
I have that, dear. Thelma Roger.
Darling, it's a name. Her father was a darling before her.
Oh, really, Sam? Can't you take a joke?
On the egg type, you should paste the label, grade double A, fresh. dear Thelma Darling, I'm stubborn. Not all of this will be news to you. The part that is will be bad news. The start of it was not a quarter eagle, but a bald eagle. He swooped in through the door of my office, landed in front of my desk, perched on the edge of a chair, and said...
My name is Eagle, Mr. Spade. Junius J. Eagle. My card.
Uh-huh. Eagle Vending Machine Company. Huh?
And they call me the Gumball King. I'm proud of it. Care to join me in a ball, sir?
Not while I'm on duty.
Oh, that's very good. Our new avocado flavor. Yes, I've kept the Bay Area chewing for 20 years. And I will not be swerved from my purpose.
Bully.
I intend to fight them tooth and nail. Hammer and tongs. To the last ditch.
Bravo.
But I'll need help. That's why I've come to you. My competitors, Mr. Spade, are leaving no stone unturned in their contemptible campaign to drive me out of business.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've resorted to outright sabotage. In short, they have hired hoodlums to destroy my gumball machines. They've already smashed 11. And they won't be content until they've demolished my entire equipment.
Sounds like a police case to me, Mr. Eagle.
I've been to the police. No, they don't understand my problem. Gave me a lot of double talk about juvenile delinquents. Ha, my foot. Cutthroat competition.
You're sure of that?
Well, what would you think? If theft were their motive, they most certainly would steal the pennies from the machines, but what do they take? My gumballs. And why do they do that?
I'll buy it.
Oh, by all means. Oh, here, try this. It's our bestseller in Chinatown. We call it Subgum.
Better not. I have to drive later.
Now, I had the foresight to buy up a 3-year supply of chewing gum at non-inflation prices.
So I see.
Well, you can see with what thoroughness they encompass my ruination. They are not only smashing my machines, they're making off with my gum.
And you want me to try and stop them?
No, I do not. No. I want you to catch them in the act and find out who is paying them.
Well, okay, Mr. Eagle. I'll see what I can do.
Good. Good. Now, in this envelope is a list of my machines and their exact locations, together with a check for your retainer.
Thank you, Mr. Eagle. I'll keep in touch with you. Oh, Mr. Eagle, I meant to ask you, how many of these gum machines do you operate here in town?
300.
Mm-hmm.
And guard them well.
300? 300 nuts.
300 nuts, Sam?
No, 300 gums. Gumball machines.
Sam, hmm? Isn't it wonderful you took this job? I mean, because of my penny card.
Hmm? I'm sorry if I wasn't listening.
My penny card, Sam. My new one, that is. I've already completed my Lincoln series. And now I'm collecting Indian heads.
Scalps?
No, Sam. Pennies. Mm. You see, this is the card. And these little slots, you see right there? That's where you put the pennies. Mm. And they're classified according to the date and the mint where they're manufactured.
Mm.
Now, you see, Sam? See where the little S is on these?
Mm.
Now, that's for the San Francisco mint.
Mm.
And the D, that's for Denver. And the ones with nothing, that's for Washington, D.C.
Yeah, well, it's a very nice hobby. Pardon me. 300 gumball machines.
You see, that's what I had in mind, Sam. All those pennies. Indian head pennies are scarce, Sam. You have to go through a lot of pennies to find even one. Honestly, sometimes when I go past one of those penny machines, it's all I can do. Oh.
F, this is all right between you and me, but don't ever mention your hobby to Mr. Eagle.
No, I won't.
Riddle me this, sweetheart. How does one detective guard 300 gumball machines scattered all over the city?
Well, if they're going to smash all of them, you could just pick out one in the middle and somewhere and wait.
No good. If it's an organized plan of sabotage, there might be some pattern. You seem to have given this some thought, though, Effie. How would you pick them?
In the busy places where they'd have more pennies.
But they're not after the pennies. They take the gum.
Well, then maybe the quiet sections where they don't sell much gum.
Well, they've knocked over 11 so far, here, there, and everywhere. Busy spots, dead spots. No pattern at all. You know, Effie, maybe I've bitten off more than I can chew. I wasn't sold on Mr. Eagle's theory that the caper was organized sabotage, but I decided to test it out anyway. I learned the operation did follow a pattern, unless it was coincidence that the 11 machines knocked over the previous night were the same 11 machines that had been refilled that afternoon. I checked with the Eagle Company's maintenance man and learned that only 5 had been refilled today. I picked the one that looked like the easiest to knock over. It was the one in the doorway of a darkened loft building near the Siemens Hiring Hall on Drum Street. At 9 in the p.m., I strolled down there. The block was deserted. I took a plant in the adjacent doorway and talked to myself until just before midnight. Then I shut up. My heart skipped a beat as she passed under the light, red hair. My secretary? Then I noticed how she was dressed. Not on the salary I pay. She paused before the gum machine, opened a large handbag, stripped off her long black gloves, dropped them in her purse, and took out a small Boy Scout-type hatchet. Went at it with the enthusiasm of Carrie Nation busting up a saloon. I edged around the doorway as she bent over the mess of pennies and gumballs at her feet. When she reached out her hand, I took one more step, and that was all. She was up on her feet facing me, and I saw that hatchet sailing through the air straight at me. Hey!
Now see what you've done.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I won't let it happen again, I hope.
Well, don't just stand there. Let's get out of here. That noise, it'll bring the police down on us.
Yeah, you're right. No, not that way. The alley. And that's how I met you, Thelma, darling. Pausing only to pick up an Indian head penny for luck, I escorted you through the alley to Washington, up Washington's Salon, jogged through Front Street, and followed that to Market, where we entered the happy hour bar and grill by way of the kitchen. You proceeded unfalteringly to the darkest booth. We sat down and caught our breath. You ordered a pirate's dream. By the way, I did get that recipe. Lime juice, grenadine, passion fruit, a sprig of mint, and 6 jiggers of rum. After two swallows, I heard myself saying... Now aren't you ashamed of yourself?
But, Sam, why should I be? After what I've been through, I think I deserve a drink.
I didn't mean that. I meant throwing that hatchet at me.
I thought you were Merle.
Who's Merle?
Why, he works for Mr. Chislehurst.
Yeah, that figures. Now tell me who Mr. Chislehurst is. Not who he works for, just who he is.
He was acting as my agent for the sale of the pearl.
Well, Natch. Look, please, don't make me say what pearl.
It's called the Black Pearl of Galila Bay. Yeah. My brother brought it back from the South Pacific when he was in the war.
Oh, yes.
When he went to prison, he gave it to me to keep for him.
Uh-huh. So you decided to sell it?
I had no choice. I needed the money desperately to finance his appeal.
Finance
it comes
appeal.
Up next week.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't get that pearl back, I don't know what I'll do. You've got to help me.
Yeah, what makes you think it's in a gumball machine?
Mr. Chislehurst took the pearl to show to a man named Junius Eagle, and that's when it disappeared. Mr. Eagle decided not to buy. And when Mr. Chislehurst returned to the hotel...
Eagle had palmed the pearl and substituted a ball of blackjack gum. Then what?
Mr. Chislehurst had Merle follow him. Nothing happened the first 2 days. But day before yesterday, he followed him to his warehouse and saw him drop a single ball of gum into a barrel of them that was waiting to be loaded onto a truck. The pearl must have been hidden in it. Why else would he do a thing like that?
Uh-huh. He would put a valuable pearl in a machine where anybody could buy it for a penny.
I suppose it'd be safe for a few days. I don't know how these machines work. Well, now you know why I had to break those machines.
Nuh-uh.
You don't believe me?
Mm-mm.
Well, what are you going to do?
Check the psycho wards and find out which one you escaped from.
Hello?
Mr. Eagle?
Speaking.
Spade.
Oh, yeah, I just got in. I've been out making my monthly collection.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I want to talk to you. You're falling down on my job. Another of my machines.
Yeah, I know. Drum Street. I nailed the hoodlum.
Ah. Who's he working for?
Let me ask you one. Did a man named Chislehurst ever try to sell you a black pearl? Hello, you still on the line? You stopped chewing.
Yes. I think you better come over to my house. Right away.
Hello. Hello. Nuts. When I came out of the phone booth, I wasn't surprised to find that you had flown the coop, darling, if I may call you by your last name. But I was surprised at what I found at my client's house. I rang the front doorbell and waited. Nothing happened. Then, through the glass door, I saw a man rush out on the landing at the top of the stairs. He half ran, half stumbled down the long flight to the entrance hall, yanked open the door, and tried to shove past me. I grabbed him.
Hey, get out of my way.
Wait a minute.
Let go. I gotta get a doctor.
You're bleeding.
No, not me. I've gotta get a doctor.
Why don't you phone?
They ripped the wires out. Now let go, or it'll be your fault if he dies.
I memorized his mug, lifted his wallet as we unclenched, and let him go. On the way upstairs, I checked his ID cards. Higgins, Morris L., employer, Eagle Vending Machine Company, occupation, maintenance supervisor. On the floor of a room at the top of the stairs was quite a sight. The floor of the room was covered almost completely with pennies. In the middle of it, sprawled forward like a miser who had been attacked while counting his hoard, was Junius J. Eagle. The wound in the back of his neck could have been caused by a small hatchet. There was a bookkeeper's account sheet open across the desk, and scrawled across the neat rows of figures, there were three words: Spade, Quarter, and Eagle.
The United States Armed Forces Radio Service is presenting the weekly adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade.
And now, back to the Quarter Eagle Caper, tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
That you, Higgins?
Yeah.
Save yourself the trip upstairs. There's nothing you can do for him.
Oh, dead, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I guess he won't need that doctor I called.
We can use one anyway. Did you tell the doc Eagle had been stabbed?
Yeah, sure I did.
Yeah, well, That means the law will come with him or ahead of him.
But I don't get it. He must have been killed for the money, but why didn't they take the pennies?
They should have. It'd look better for you if they had.
You're that detective he hired, huh?
That's right. Now, look, Higgins, we haven't got much time. If you want to find out who killed your boss, spill everything you know to me now, before the cops get here. Because they're going to hold you, and they'll hold me, too, if they find me here.
But I don't know a thing, Spade. I just found him like that.
How did you get in the house?
I have a key. He gave me one, so when I came here to pick up the pennies, he wouldn't have to come all the way down to let me in.
For now, tell the cops the door was open. Did he always collect the pennies from the machines himself?
Yeah. He was a coin collector as a hobby. He liked to go through them and save out the odd ones.
You always pick up the money at 1 in the a.m.?
Oh, no. No, he called me tonight a little past midnight, and he asked me to come right over. Hey, look, you got to believe that.
I do. He said the same thing to me. What do you know about a man named Chislehurst?
Chislehurst? Hey, wait a minute. That's the name of the guy that ran into my truck yesterday coming down the California incline near Grant. He slammed right into the rear of my truck. I tangled with his chauffeur, some punk kid.
Named Merle?
Yeah, that's what they called him. And there was a dame in the car, too, a redhead.
Any report on the accident?
No, the cop took it down on the beat there. There wasn't no damage.
Sounds like we haven't got much more time here.
No.
What exactly happened the night the first gun machine on your route was smashed up? Come on.
Well, first off, I went to a bowling alley on Church Street and removed our machine there. It was discontinued.
Wait a minute, where did you take it? Back to the shop?
Oh, wait a second, I got it here in my book.
Come on.
All right, I'm hurrying. Here it is, 11864.
Mm-hmm.
No, I exchanged it for an out of order down on Drum Street.
Did you leave the pennies in it?
Oh, sure. They only get collected once a month.
How much gum was in it?
About half full. I didn't refill it until today.
Yeah. What's your system on the refill operation?
Well, I carry about 4 extra machines in the truck. When I go to fill a machine, I take one of the extras already filled out of the truck and trade for the empty.
Yeah.
Then I fill the empty one in the truck, and that saves me from carrying the bag around. Now, is there anything else I can tell you?
Yeah.
Huh?
Does Quarter Eagle mean anything to you?
No.
Okay, now where's the back door? That Quarter Eagle. What was it? Was it a wrestling hole like the Half Nelson? I thought of asking Effie, but I was afraid she'd know. I was sure that if I could find Chislehurst, I could get all the answers at once. That collision between his car and the rear end of Higgins' truck was a good lead in more ways than one. It meant that at least part of your story, darling, was true. But you neglected to tell me that you, Chislehurst, and Merle had been tailing Higgins' appointed rounds of the gumball machine. I checked the police report on the accident. The car was registered in Great Britain. The report said transient, no local address, and so to bed. I dreamed it was next Thanksgiving, and I was eating a roast of Quarter Eagle. Then it turned into Crow.
Good morning, sir. Do you wish to place a classified ad?
Good morning to you, madam. Indeed, I do.
Kindly write it on this blank.
Kindly read it off this blank.
Well, Quarter Eagle, interested parties, apply Sam Spade. Sutter, 37596.
That's right.
It's 9 words, sir. I'll have to charge you for 3 lines anyway. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Yes, but it's not fit to print. Barney's Beanery.
Mr. Spade?
Yeah.
You got it for sale, the Quarter Eagle?
Who's speaking?
I am speaking. Sergei Zacharias.
Zacharias.
You are numismatist?
No, this is Mr. Spade himself. Look, I'd like to talk to you personally. Where can I reach you?
Oh, I am by my shop, 2 doors from Belvedere Coffee Shop on O'Farrell Street.
Okay, Mr. Zacharias, I'll be right over. Why didn't you do more talking last night? My client might be alive if you had.
Oh, it's terrible. But how could I have known?
You knew about the Quarter Eagle. Why did you spin that yarn about the pearl?
How did you find out about it?
Dead men sometimes do tell tales.
Surely you don't think that I had anything to do with that.
He was only hacked to death with a hatchet like the one you threw at me. That makes you look fine.
All right, I killed him, if that'll make you listen to me. Sam, don't go into that shop.
Please,
it's a
new
trap.
Suit.
You don't know that man, Zacharias. He's the cause of all our troubles.
You mean he sold you that hatchet?
Sam, please!
Quit clawing me. Let go.
I won't allow you to go in there. I won't.
Wait a minute. What's going on here? What's the occasion of the squabble? Oh, well, no, it's Mr. Spade.
Yeah, Clancy, this dame here just tried to pick my pocket.
Pickpocket, is it? Glory be in such a pretty one, too.
Never mind that, Clancy. Just have it locked up. I'll be down later to prefer charges. Hello? Anybody home?
Okay, Shelmers. Just keep on walking. Straight through the back room. One move and I rip you wide open.
Yeah, better not, Merle. Your boss might not like that.
Smart guy. Knows everybody's name.
Oh, my dear sir. A most propitious meeting. You've brought the Quarter Eagle?
Where's Zacharias?
He's resting at the moment in yonder closet. Oh, no, not dead. Merely under restraint, bound and gagged. A necessary precaution. Well, shall we talk turkey, or rather, eagle?
Tell your punk to take that knife out of my ribs.
Who's a punk?
Now, Merle. There's been quite enough violence.
Check. I think I'll take that knife. Leave it there. Now, sit down.
Merle. Oh, headstrong boy. Now, as to the Quarter Eagle. I'm willing to pay a reasonable reward for its recovery. But first, I must tell you that Miss Darling, for whom I'm acting as agent for the sale of the coin, is indeed the legal owner, despite anything Mr. Zacharias may have told you to the contrary. What would you say to $500?
I would say no dice.
$1,000?
I would say I'm still listening.
Sir, you seem to exaggerate the value of that tiny gold piece.
It was worth one human life to somebody. That sounds like more than $1,000 to me.
You may find the market valuation of that particular mintage of the Quarter Eagle in my coin catalog, $10,000. But, sir, that valuation is based upon the mistaken belief that there were only two in existence. It was while rummaging in her grandmother's attic that Miss Darling came upon a third. And when she brought it to me, I could scarcely credit it. It was a matter of official record that two specimens had been stamped out when the die broke. And then it came to me. There must have been a third. Namely, the coin which was in that rude stamping press when the die broke. A closer examination of the Quarter Eagle now in your possession revealed certain markings.
Yeah.
Some defective feathers in the war bonnet on the obverse.
Uh-huh.
And a cleavage in the numeral 4 of the date, 1841.
Yeah, all right. So how much is it worth?
Well, as I say, the price last paid was 10,000. I think we may safely assume it would bring several times that amount in today's market. But only, mind you, if but two specimens, not three, are in existence.
Uh-huh. So you decided it would be more profitable to clam up about it and see what the owners of the other two coins would pay to keep this one off the market.
Precisely, sir.
How did it get in that gum machine?
Ah, therein lies the tale.
Keep it short, will you? I'm getting hungry.
Well, sir, I brought the Quarter Eagle to Mr. Zacharias.
Yeah.
Who was acting as agent for the owner of the other two coins. An Australian sheep herder, I believe.
Mm.
Retired now.
Yes, I'm glad.
Well, not to put too fine a point on it, Mr. Zacharias' offer was so poor that I took umbrage.
Oh, you didn't?
I gave him a caning and left the premises.
Really?
But I'd gone no farther than half a league up Turk Street when I became aware that two ruffians were skulking at my heels.
No.
Sent, I had no doubt, by Mr. Zacharias to rob me of the Quarter Eagle.
Egad, sir.
Precisely. Knowing full well that they would not dare to strike in a populous, well-lighted resort,
yes.
I entered a bowling alley at the corner of Hyde Street. No pun intended.
Thank you for that, sir.
But there upon the wall, I spied a penny vending machine, and the word eagle caught my eye. Association of ideas, no doubt.
No doubt.
But that, sir, is how I came to put the Quarter Eagle into Mr. Eagle's gum machine.
Yes, I think I can take it from there. When you went back, the machine had been taken out by the Eagle Company's maintenance man, right?
Not quite. I caught him in the very act of removing the machine and followed him out of the building.
Yeah, but then you lost track of the machine. I found out why. Never mind that now. What I want to know is, who followed Mr. Eagle home the night he was killed?
I'd rather not say.
Then all bids are off.
One moment, Mr. Spade.
Yeah?
Am I to infer that your price for the Quarter Eagle necessarily includes bringing the murderer to justice?
Just that, Mr. Chislehurst.
Well, I suppose there's nothing for it but to make the supreme sacrifice. Merle.
Me? You double-crossing pig?
But now, Merle, you know perfectly well you did away with poor Mr. Eagle.
Shut up. I'll cut you to pieces.
Gross insubordination. You deliberately exceeded your instructions. I wanted you to apply only sufficient violence to recover the coin. Instead, you seized the opportunity to satisfy your nauseating bloodlust. Really, Merle?
Cut you to pieces. I'll cut you to pieces.
All right, drop. Ow! Drop the shiv, Merle. Knife happy punk.
Egad, that was a near thing, sir. The base ingratitude of that boy. Oh, well, what's done is done. When may I expect delivery of the Quarter Eagle?
I didn't answer him. To cover my embarrassment, I gagged him, manacled him to Merle, and delivered the package marked one murderer, one accessory, to the dumbfounded minions of the law. And that, Thelma, darling, I regret to inform you, is still the crop. After I'd sprung you from the pokey, I got hold of Higgins, and we went through every coin out of every Eagle gumball machine in the city of San Francisco. It couldn't happen, but it did. Your Quarter Eagle is, shall we say, no place. Period. End of report.
Sam, I'm disappointed in you.
Well, so am I, sweetheart.
But I'll forgive you if you found even one Indian head penny from my penny card.
Yeah, just one from that machine on Drum Street.
Oh, Sam.
There you are, sweetheart.
Oh, thank you. And it's an old one.
And older than I feel. Go type that up.
It's counterfeit.
Are you sure?
It's joke money. It says $2.50.
Hmm?
You see where it should say 1 cent? $2.50.
Let me see that. $2.50. If an eagle is a $10 gold piece, what is a $2.50 gold piece?
Oh, now, let me see. $5 would be half. Sam.
Right. A quarter eagle. Yeah, that's just dirt on it, see? It's gold,
oh,
really.
Oh, look at it shine.
Like the stars in your eyes, sweetheart.
Oh, you darling. Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Loreen Tuttle is Effie.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
An episode of The Adventures of Sam Spade. Howard Duff and Loreen Tuttle, our stars. The Quarter Eagle Caper. That broadcast, an Armed Forces radio transcription from November 28th, 1948. And that does it for this hour of the Upstate Radio Theater. Thank you so much for joining me for some great old-time radio. My name is Jake Longwell. I look forward to your company again very soon when, once more, we'll turn back the clock and revisit this wonderful, magical time in broadcast history that we call the Golden Age of Radio. I hope you can join me then. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.